Hello, my name is Scott Shade, and I would like to welcome you to this podcast that'll probably be a multi-part podcast because I've got a lot of material that I need to cover in some depth. The subject of this podcast will be using Flight Simulator 2002 from Microsoft with adaptive technology, showing how you can fly a plane, what you can expect when you are flying, what the flight environment sounds like, and a discussion of what it takes to be able to fly and how it all generally works together. This is a rather offbeat way of passing the time. You can't approach this from the standpoint of playing it like a game, because that's not how it's intended. Flight Simulator is designed to be a procedures simulator. I mean that it's designed, the goal being that you would go through the process of doing a flight plan, filing your flight plan with air traffic control, flying the actual flight, handling in-flight situations that come up with air traffic control, and then making a safe and effective landing at the airport that's in your destination, getting off the runway and to your assigned gate that you're given. That being said, because we are visually impaired, there are certain aspects of this game that we can't do as realistically as we would like to, possibly, but there are workarounds in place that do make this possible to accomplish, and I will explain that as I go into this. I have always enjoyed listening to aircraft communications, and since I hold a ham radio call sign, this just seemed to be a natural jump off try this and see if I could do it. And I've also enjoyed flying when I've gone out to get my dogs. So the two just sort of went hand in hand. I can tell you that if you do manage to get everything to work together and you've got a system that works out well for you, this can become a rather addictive hobby. And there's great lengths that you can take it to. I have just started trying to fly with a virtual airline, and that is an airline that does not exist in real life, but it exists on the internet and it has flights from its various hubs. I'm assigned to the Phoenix, Arizona hub of American Flight Airways, and it has partnered with another airline company to provide regional and low-cost transportation, as well as main flight lines to various other cities. And I'm still learning a little bit about that. But the main focus and thrust of this whole podcast is to show you that it is possible to use Flight Simulator. Currently, the most accessible version that's out there that is being used is Flight Simulator 2002. I can't take credit for all this because, quite frankly, we were turned on to this in the U.S. by some people that are doing it in Brazil. The problem is that there's a bit of a language barrier, and it's sometimes difficult to get information understandable from them, you know, where it makes sense to us. I've done some work to that effect, and I've been able to make some progress, but a lot of what I have done has been trial and error on my own, and it has not been an easy task, but it has been one that's been rather rewarding. So, before we start, I think I will outline what the goal of this will ultimately be. I will take you through a flight. We will fly from Lambert International Airport in St. Louis, and we will go to O'Hare Airport in Chicago. The reason I've chosen those two is because A, they're reasonably close together, B, it allows for me to demonstrate certain aspects of doing flights, letting a program called FS Navigator do a good majority of the flying for us, but it also allows me to interrupt that flight plan and show how, with the use of the autopilot and guidance from air traffic control, that it is actually possible to follow a flight plan, get on the correct heading, and follow altitude and then speed instructions as indicated by FAA law and the guidance of your air traffic controller. There has been some interest in this project. It's been a few weeks in coming, and it will probably be a few weeks later before the final draft actually gets put out and sent to Blind Cool Tech when I do this, because as I learn new things, I want to add it in. And I must apologize, this is my first podcast, and I'm not as comfortable with the delivery as I thought I would be, actually. But the things you need to make this work, there are several pieces of software. Flight Simulator 2002 is the main piece. Without this, everything else is sort of secondary. The second most important piece is a piece of software called FS Navigator. It is a flight management system, flight planner, chart system, all rolled into one package. Basically, you can generate your flight plan in FS Navigator, export it over to Flight Simulator 2002, and it will the plane will fly given the instructions that are in the flight plan. And I'll explain this more as I do it, because it'll make more sense as we apply it step by step. The third piece of software you need is a little applet that installs on your computer called FSUIPC. It stands for Flight Simulator User Interface. And this is what allows other add-ons, such as a program called S-Combo, which provides some feedback in the form of announcements to passengers and or crew announcements, or another program called FDC Live Cockpit, which is a more souped-up version of the mentioned S-Combo program, where you get the same crew announcements, but you also get the crew doing various things like handling your flaps on your takeoff and landing, and adjusting your landing gear, and going through your aircraft checklists and stuff like that. Another program that is also used as an alternative to these is one called PM Sounds. It's very basic, but it also provides some sound effects when you're flying. If I can, I will try to work it in so that I can demonstrate all of them, but I'm not sure. As I do this, I'm not sure the exact form that this is going to take. Because this is such a long, drawn-out process, if it was going to be a simple matter of demonstrating a single piece of software, I could probably just demonstrate this and be done. But to actually do this and do it as well as I have been doing, I actually had to go through a 173-page ground school manual learning how to fly and understanding concepts. And I also had to read an 88-page manual on air traffic control and how it works with flight simulators so that I could better understand the sequence of events that goes through, you know, getting your clearance and taxiing to the runway and taking off and handling in-flight things that happen. And also just understanding how to use these things in Flight Simulator, because a lot of the menus don't read like they should. And some of us in the U.S., especially JAWS users, are having issues where if we're trying to use the FS Navigator program that you need to work with Flight Simulator, the screen, even though it's up on the screen and it's running, JAWS doesn't see it there, and every time you use your JAWS cursor to arrow around the window, it just says blank, blank, blank. And I have managed to fix this problem to date. I don't know how it was that I managed to fix it. Knock on wood, it hasn't It hasn't been an issue for almost a month now since I got it fixed. And I know that the people in Brazil haven't had any similar issues like some other people here in the U.S. are having. Another person I know is using WindowEyes on a laptop with an external keyboard, and he's doing quite well. WindowEyes and System Access also give a fairly decent read of the FS Navigator window in Flight Simulator. The only difference is that System Access doesn't see a few of the controls and let you actually act on them. Stuff for trying to fly a holding pattern on a VOR, which is an omnidirectional navigational beacon near an airport or something like that. And these things are kind of necessary if you're in a congested situation and you want control of a situation, and air traffic control has asked you to go into a holding pattern away from the airport. Basically, if you were using System Access, you would have fairly good control of your flight right up until the point where you would need to go into a holding pattern, because you could set the holding pattern up, but you couldn't execute the option to fly to fly the holding pattern and then leave and finish flying the flight plan. There's another issue that I discovered a couple weeks ago, where you could control your descent and ascent, your vertical speed, drop and climb rate, using the keyboard, and the way you have to control it, it looks like there's going to be a conflict within System Access, getting focus back and forth and being able to check things. I'm not sure that I've found a workaround for it yet either. Other than that, the best screen reader by far that seems to give the best overall support for Flight Sim is JAWS, followed closely by WindowEyes, and I think WindowEyes could be improved upon if somebody knew how to do the highlighting of various text colors and other components in the various menus that come up in Microsoft Flight Simulator. System Access is good in that it presents the screen in a much similar way as JFW does, and you can access the various flight controls within FS Navigator and the Flight Simulator autopilot as you can with JAWS. The only difference that I have noticed between JAWS and WindowEyes and System Access really is that WindowEyes, for some inexplicable reason, completely redraws the screen so that things that you're used to seeing in one area of the screen in System Access or WindowEyes, System Access or JAWS, are completely in different locations under WindowEyes. So it takes a bit of getting used to. That said, if you can take your time and work through the difficulties and you love to fly, this is actually quite interesting to do. So with that, I think I will explain some terms you will start hearing as we go through this. The first will be the air traffic control terms that you will hear. You'll hear terms like clearance or clearance delivery. That's basically what's happening is a pilot has his flight plan filed under basically one of two rules, IFR flight rules or VFR flight rules. IFR is instrument flight rules, which means that the pilot can navigate solely by the use of instruments, except for the final point of the flight plan, where he physically must look out the window of the cockpit and be able to physically see the runway at, I believe, the minimum distance out is at half a mile. If he can't see the runway at half a mile or 250 feet from the surface, he needs to be aborting his landing and heading for somewhere that he can see better, or he's got to have a backup plan in place, because even on instrument flight rules, which assumes you're going to want to use those conditions under really, really bad weather conditions, if you can't see that runway, you don't know what you're coming down on. VFR stands for visual flight rules. Visual flight rules is by its very nature a very visual thing. If you can see the runway and your visibility is unobstructed, and there's some more technical definitions for the boundaries and clarifications of visual flight rules come into play. I don't remember them exactly, but the idea being, if you can see it and you can work with it, then you can fly with it, being fly visual flight rules. Night flying, for example, for some pilots is a problem since they can't see the horizon line very clearly, depending on altitude or conditions. Night flying pilots generally have to get IFR instrument flight rules rating before they can fly at night, which makes sense since they have no idea of what they're coming into, they have to depend on their instruments. Departure is basically what it sounds. You are leaving. So a plane being asked to contact, say, Chicago departure, is a frequency that you would contact if you are making your, if you're exiting the airspace around that particular airport. The word taxi, T-A-X-I, refers to leaving the gate and moving out to the runway. This is the process of moving out to the runway from where you are. They don't mention it in the flight control stuff that you will hear, but pushback refers to a term that refers to getting pushed back from the gate and getting maneuvered so that you can start your taxi to the runway. I know there are some other terms that are going to be involved here. There'll be some phonetics that'll be mentioned, phonetic letters that are mentioned. I'm not exactly sure what they're used for. For example, you might hear something like my aircraft say, St. Louis, clearance delivery, Gaia 271, with India, requesting IFR clearance to Chicago O'Hare Airport. I don't know what the India stands for example, and there was nothing clearly designated in the manual as to what that would stand for. The tower, when I'm told to contact the tower, refers to the air control tower that is managing the traffic at the runway or the airport in question. I will be asked to taxi to and hold short of the runway that I'm being asked to go onto. You never want to cross any runways at an airport because you never know for sure if there's any traffic on them unless directed to do so by air traffic control. The general rule of thumb is you can get to a set of, I believe it's like double thick lines that are at the runway marker, and that's where you hold to receive your clearance for takeoff. And once that has been accomplished, at that point you have your clearance, then you can actually leave. As I am climbing and leaving the airport, you will hear my aircraft receive instructions to change to different headings and to climb to certain flight levels and or to follow these instructions and then resume my own navigation. What I'm being asked to do is follow a set of instructions where I'm changing to a different heading for whatever the reason is, to get around some aircraft that might be in the way, or I'm being vectored around something that's air traffic control considers a threat. And while I'm doing that, I am maintaining my climb to my assigned flight level for my flight plan. And as I get these instructions, it may say, for example, Gaia 271, turn left heading 270, climb and maintain flight level 350, resume on navigation. Well, what that means is after you have turned left to a heading of 270 and you have climbed to flight level 350, you can then begin doing your own navigation from your charts. Well, in general, that's what that implies. Flight Sims air traffic control is a little flaky, so you might hear me get a few of these messages as I'm actually climbing to flight level 350. At a certain point into the process of flying, I will be asked to contact a specific center. In the case of our flight, Gaia 271 will be told to contact Kansas City Center. Kansas City Center starts handling traffic at a certain minimum altitude and is responsible for the flight following activities and the daily the actual handling of aircraft in its space on an ongoing basis at a set minimum altitude. Once you fall below that minimum altitude, then you become the jurisdiction of the airports that you're flying over. And you'll see that happen. I will be handed off to probably two or three dispatchers for Kansas City Center, and I'll probably get handed off to about two or three different dispatchers or more for Chicago Center. As we near the end of the flight, as we're making our descent, you will hear the dispatcher, the controller, say something about Gaia 271 contact Chicago approach, and it'll give a frequency. Now this is all assuming that I fly everything right, and because of a glitch in the way FS-2002's air traffic control system works, or rather doesn't work entirely well with FS Navigator's system, it doesn't see exactly the chart that FS Navigator is using, even though the information is the same in both flight plans, the one generated in FS Navigator and the one that was exported from FS Navigator to Microsoft Flight Simulator 2002. In theory, they should have the same information and this shouldn't be a problem. In actuality, there is a problem. So I may elect to just have the various air traffic control centers, after a certain point, just do what's called flight following. Follow what I'm doing on radar, but not really interfere in any major way except to tell me to contact the regional center that I need to contact as I enter their airspace. But we'll deal with that during the flight as it comes up. You will hear the term glide slope and localizer mentioned. These are two components that make up the instrument landing system, ILS, at an airport. And what they are, if you can imagine, well, the glide slope is easiest to imagine. If you can imagine it as a vertical line starting from the far end of the runway and extending away from the airport, coming up about, oh, what is it, 2 or 3 miles up at an angle, so that an aircraft coming down from higher altitudes would pick it up anywhere between 2,000 and 3,000 feet from the surface. The glide slope line allows an aircraft to follow a steady descent pattern, staying on that glide slope line to the runway surface, to, I think it's about maybe, was it 250 feet off the surface of the runway, because at that point the pilot has to be able to see the runway or decide whether he's not going to continue with his landing. What makes the glide slope easier to follow is something else called the localizer, which is like a cross, almost like a crosshair. If you can imagine like the glide slope and the localizer forming like a big letter, a lowercase T, on an angle. That's the way I visualize it. The glide slope gives you a horizontal line of direction that's displayed on your instrument panel. It makes like a graphic between the glide slope and the localizer. You get this like crosshair over the runway, as I understand it. It makes it easier to see coming down. Also, if you have some good visibility and you can still see, but you're still flying IFR, it makes it easier to see, to get a sense of what's going on, because you've got that graphic, plus you can look out over the nose of your aircraft and see the runway as you're coming down. And between being able to see the end of the runway and actually see the markers on your instrument panel, you get an idea of what's going on. Good IFR pilots can follow that glide slope to within 2 degrees of the runway heading either side. Under actual conditions, you might be bouncing around under turbulent conditions if it's bad weather, and you might drift. And a good pilot using those markers can hold a heading right down to the runway surface and bring a Boeing 777, which is a fairly large aircraft, right down on the runway fairly smoothly. I think that pretty much wraps up the definitions of what you will probably hear as we fly. Others, as we run across them, I'll explain them, because I'm sure I've forgotten some. I think as I do this, I'm looking at a three-part section. One is this, the terms and definitions and an idea of what's going to be happening. Two will be the setting up of the flight plan and showing you FS-2002 and flight and the FS Navigator program and how all that works together. And I will show you sound effects of the various aircrafts in Flight Sim 2002. And section 3 will be the actual flight after we've gotten everything set up and we're ready to go. That'll be the actual flight that I do. I have been asked by a few people, because of the nature of this, if they want I was originally going to do this as a one-part thing where I was just going to do everything in one shot, but it's going to be very long, and I don't want to put everybody through a really long podcast. So the initial idea had been those that would want the flight, the complete flight, unedited, I was going to send them a copy of that. But I think what I'm going to do instead is I'm going to break this into sections, and the culmination of all this will be the final flight that I actually do. And if I have time, and if circumstances allow for it, I will also try to get in some sound snippets of online air traffic control on VATSIM, VATSIM. I think it's www.vatsim.net, I believe, is the website. I can't remember exactly. And I'll try to give you an idea of what that sounds like. If you want some indication of what that'll kind of be like, you can use your web browser and go to www.liveatc.net. That's live ATC, all one word, .net. And there you will find online air traffic control transmissions. And that should give you an indication. You know, actually, I think
desktop.
I think I'm actually telling you
start
wrong.
Button.
So
start menu.
I want to double check myself.
Leaving menus, run dialog, type. Desktop, folder view list view, studio recorder 2459.
I think we're about to get some company. I think my dog 2%, is being brought 100%. Out into the living room here.
Live air traffic control communications live ATC.net Windows Internet Explorer.
Aha, there it is. Okay, so yeah, here's the site. And actually, I guess while I have it up here, if I can, I will actually very quickly, if I can.
No windows active.
If
playback control.
Flight
playback
Sim will, Internet Explorer will cooperate.
Taskbar playback control. Studio recorder document 1. Playback control button. Studio recorder document 1 button.
Oh, it disappeared. How unfortunate.
Start menu. W.
Here we go.
Live Air Traffic Control Communication.
We'll bring it back.
Traffic. Live ATC Audio Feeds.
Live ATC Audio Feeds. That's what we want.
16%. 100%.
Because this is live, the signal quality will be different depending on the feed.
Links list dialog. Listen to Core Chicago IL. Core Chicago IL.
We'll listen to Chicago O'Hare for a little bit.
Listen to Core Chicago IL.
See if anything's 0%. Going on there.
Verifying core.m3u from audio.livit.net dialog. Live Air Traffic Control Audio Feeds Live ATC.net Windows Internet Explorer. Listen to Core Chicago IL. Visited link traffic.
4000 Mark 804. 1474 to maintain 8000. 29 of 1588, visual 27 left. Got a 1588 Air Cairo with 27 left, turn to land with 270 at 8. Turn to land 27 left, United 1588, is Bravo 20 open? B20, affirmative. Yeah, Bravo, not Charlie. Yeah, Bravo 20 is open. Awesome, thank you. GPS 607 Heavy, kind of departure, 125.0.
GPS 607 heading. Good morning.
Time runway 32 right, position at hold. Traffic 3 miles out, runway 32 right.
That was a wrong turn. You need to get back on Alpha at the next intersection and then join Bravo again. Back at Alpha 12 for over to Bruce.
Waiting for a manager.
90 heading, Mark and 804.
Definitely 938, good evening. There's a part of 27.
Title is 1.
You must have MD-80 time, huh?
7 heavy.
I'm up in 360, maintaining 2,500.
360 heading down to 2,500, 804.
Live Air Traffic Control.
That is a little bit of an idea of what that might actually sound like online. And it's actually scary because the theme of VATSIM is as real as it gets. And as you can tell, some of those air traffic controllers and the pilots live in the land of what I choose to call the ultimate slur. If they can speak fast, get through their words, keep it semi-intelligible and understand each other, then life is good. It would take me some time to get used to that. I've listened to some of this on VATSIM, and it's amazing that we don't have any accidents because of the way they speak. But pilots and controllers get into a speak all their own, and as you get comfortable with it, I guess it becomes easier. But anyway, you will hear something like that if I get a chance to demonstrate VATSIM a little bit. And actually, I had a chance to fly using VATSIM. It wasn't exactly something that I had planned to do, but I was flying from Phoenix, Arizona to Detroit, Michigan. And I thought, well, I need to solve some technical glitches that I'm dealing with, so this seems as good a time to do it. So although I was in the middle of a flight, I popped online on the air traffic control server at 19,000 feet at a nice leisurely 470 knots ground speed, and proceeded to contact the only air traffic control center I saw online, which happened to be Fort Worth Center. Now, before I went online, Flight Sims Air Traffic Control that was handling me was Albuquerque Center. So I was a little bit confused. So I got on the frequency for Fort Worth Center, and I identified myself and asked if he could clarify if I was under his jurisdiction. And he comes back and he says, can you give me your transponder code or give me your ID so I can find you? So I gave him my information. And he located me, and he goes, no, you are approximately 350 nautical miles out from my airspace boundary. He says, you're still under Albuquerque Center's jurisdiction, but there's nobody on out for Albuquerque Center right now. And he says, your flight path is going to take you through Kansas City Center's territory. No one's online for them, but you will be picking up Chicago Center soon, and they do have a controller on at present, so be on the lookout for him to show up in your list. Because your list updates as you fly, and things can get a little interesting. I will say that the client used on VATSIM is not as accessible as I would like, but it is there, and I think it might be able to be made more accessible, but I'm not entirely sure yet what all would need to happen. As I talked to this controller, we got to discussing how I was able to fly the aircraft being visually impaired, and I was telling him how I was using FS Navigator to do my flight plan and all that, and he says, well, I can understand that, but he says, how do you control the aircraft? And I was telling him how I use FS Navigator through the autopilot on the aircraft to control it, and he says, that's cool, but how do you land? So I was telling him all my flight plans are IFR, and I let the flight plan take me down to within about 500 feet of the runway, and then I between the combination of using the autopilot and quick reflexes, I control the descent of the aircraft down to the runway itself. He says, okay. He says, I've just never come across this situation before. Usually everybody that I'm dealing with can see, and they've got their maps up on their screen, and they can see what's around them. So I asked him, I said, well, what is around me? Because I said, the only thing I see is you. I said, I don't have any other indication of pilots at the moment on, you know, that I can see in my list. And he said, well, right now there are 7 aircraft that are in the area. Of those 7, 4 are on the ground. The other 3 are in the air at various flight levels and distances. We have one at flight level 350, which is 35,000. The numbering scheme is going to be different. It won't. If you're used to straight numbers, you won't get this here. You have another one at flight level 270, which is 27,000, and another one at 190, 19,000. And coincidentally, 195 would be 19,500, just so you get an idea. They tend to work to the nearest 100. He said, of those 3 aircraft, the closest to you is 300 and some odd miles away at your 6 o'clock position. So, he said, you've got plenty of room to navigate, and it looks like you're in good shape. And so I ended up my conversation with him, and I chose not to stay online up to Chicago Center, so I advised him that I was going to be going off the network so that he wouldn't have to track me or wonder what was going on. And I went ahead and flew the rest of my route using Flight Sim's built-in air traffic control. But it was neat, because I discovered then, although I was a little afraid of doing this online, I discovered that these controllers really don't bite that hard, and it was actually kind of fun. So, but anyway, I think I've pretty much done what I set out to do in this section of the podcast. So in the second section, we will go through the setup of a flight plan, and I will show you Flight Simulator, and then the third and probably final episode will be the use of VATSIM, letting you listen a little bit, and also the actual flight itself. So with that, I think we'll say good night, and thank you for sticking with me. I hope that you find this enjoyable, and I look forward to keeping your interest and participation through the next 2 podcasts. So thank you very much. Good night.